My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
I
haven't found the necessary drink since January 25th, 1981. So it's good to be here. And this, I think, is, I've been told, I think it's the last deal. You know, I mean, I'm not sure how many weeks I've been here, but this is pretty much it. We just started a new one at the 12 Step House on Tuesdays, right down the street there. So. So I'll be starting that one, but it's good to be here with you guys. It's a real privilege to do this sort of stuff. I'm relaxed. We went kind of wild yesterday at the 12 step room. It was pretty bloody. It's terrible stuff. It was I don't know. The meds had worn off. Something was going on. I don't know what happened. You know, afterwards I was really repentant. And I said, oh man, that was crazy. But I'm calmed down now. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to talk about penises or vaginas or anything like that or any of that stuff. None of that. I'm going to try to even cool it on the F-bombs. I did one the other night where I, you know, over at Boca. You know, I'm capable of, you know, really, if, you know, assume, if I'm not taking drugs or anything, I'm capable of not doing that. But so I'm just going to talk a little bit about the 11th and 12th step. We'll see how this works, whether I can fit it in, you know, and... You know, one of the things it says in the, I'm real relaxed with you guys. I like you guys. One of the things it says in the 12 step, you know, we not only talk about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Each man tells in his own personal experience how he established his relationship with God. That's right out of the book. So what I'm going to do is I've decided what I'm going to do is try to be honest and see how that works out, you know, and talk about my own personal experience as to where I am. And I'm 72 years old. I got a wife. 4 kids, 7 grandkids, one more on the way, and I've been in AA. This is my 41st year, and I've changed since. I've certainly changed since I was drinking like a crazy man out there, but I've changed since I've come to AA, and I'm completely different now than when I first came into our spiritual kindergarten here, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about. I think I want to talk in a shorthand way because we don't have a lot of time. So to give you the layout as to what happened to me as far as my spiritual journey, because the 11th step is basically, you know, improving our conscious contact with God. So, you know, I don't mean to insult anybody or hurt anybody's feelings. I don't care whether you're a Muslim, Jew, Christian, banana, whatever, you know, worshiping toads, you know, do whatever you want to do. But I'm going to talk about my personal journey, you know, so you get an idea of what's going on. And I'm just going to mention, throw out a few things and, you know, it might be interesting and it might not. I would suggest anybody who really wants to look at this thing, you read the book Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which basically tells what was going on in AA between 1935 and 1939 or 1940 before they even wrote the big book and that kind of stuff. And you might start connecting some dots. I've been connecting dots for like 40 years now in AA, so a lot of things that were mysterious to me. You know, it says in the book, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and true happiness will find none at all. One of the consequences I found in my alcoholism is if somebody tells me something I don't like, it confuses me and I ignore it or I hurt them. I hate them. When my first wife said to me, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Is that too complex for you, 12 words? I was sober at the time when she said that. I got in my car, I drove 12 blocks, and I said to myself, what the hell do you mean by that? I was confused. I didn't understand. Why would she say something? Because I didn't understand it. So it is possible to read the big book and not read it. It's possible to read the big book or listen to somebody and not hear it. You know, and one of the lines in one of my, if you get my emails, one of the lines I have in there, one of the sayings, it says a man can see something 999 times and then look at it for the 1,000th time and see it for the first time. If you've been in here for a while, you know it is possible to be 10 years sober or 5 years sober and read a line in the big book that you've read 1,000 times and all of a sudden it makes sense to you. All of a sudden you actually read it. So you can read the big book. And just because you read the big book, it doesn't necessarily mean you actually read the big book. In other words, when the big book says a lot of pretty wild things, you know, and most of the time, new people are told things like, most of the time when you come in here, and you know, alcoholics like to blend, and one of our consequences is we want people to like us, We don't want to look stupid, okay? And we don't like being told what to do, and we're defiant. So you got to come in here. You got a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff that comes in here when people are talking, because they are in fear what other people are thinking of them, is to make sure that they like to entertain, they like people laughing and everything like that, but they don't want to say anything where people may not like them. The big book, as mild as it is, and as much as it likes to, you know, I don't know, not confront people, it says some pretty serious stuff. Stuff that you won't really hear in AA. As a matter of fact, in AA, you'll hear stuff like, don't talk about the God. You might scare away the newcomer. I mean, you get the feeling that if you talk about God, people are going to die. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you read the big book. It's all about God and establishing the relationship with God. And God's, I'm not going to do all the quotes I do. I know them by heart. You know, God, you know, it's there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. You know, God either is or isn't. What's your decision going to be? You know, if a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life, would have we be so, but didn't so, you know, that was when we wrote a book to talk about God. This sort of thing, the atheist and agnostic sort of thinking has to be abandoned. Bill Wilson, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this temple, I got to keep talking about. Dr. Bob, if you have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from going on this book, I feel sorry for you. You know, I mean, on and on and on and on about the God thing. You know, self-centeredness, we must get rid of this substance. It must be killed. God makes that possible. Once we make a sincere desire to turn our lives over to God, what does it say? It says, he'll give us everything we need if we stay close to him, perform his work well. You want to be rocked to the fourth dimension against the dimension, you want to, you know, experience much of heaven. The great fact is this, nothing less than this. You got to make God the centerpiece of your life. You know what I mean? Be convinced that he lives in your heart and mind in a way which is indeed miraculous. I mean, all over the, I mean, there's so many more. God, 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 and you come day and, you know, everybody's making sure nobody talks about God and, you know, don't stress the God thing too much. Let's talk about the problems and the psychology of it and all that sort of stuff, and don't hurt anybody's feelings. And you're pretty much given the idea. This isn't the way it was, by the way, the first 5 or 10 years in AA. I promise you, this isn't the way. The meetings, the first 5 or 10 years, the first 5 years in AA, you couldn't go to a meeting unless you got down on your knees in front of everybody else and gave your life to God. That was the entry point, you know what I mean? So you get the feeling that's a qualifier. Listen to me. When in order to walk through a door of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have to get down on your knees in front of a bunch of people and give your life to God before they allow you in the meeting, that's a pretty good idea that you probably are going to hear something about God in the meetings. You understand what I'm saying? And they were using the Bible. And the books they found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. So you can imagine, of course these were mostly low-bottom drunks, you can imagine that the meetings that they had back then, you know, it wasn't like the meetings, you know, there was none of this stuff, don't talk about the God thing, you might scare them off. They were scaring those guys off before they walked up through the door. You had done the third step before you walked through the door, but of course they were desperate, and that's how it was. So you're getting sort of like a different deal here. But so what they do here now, I'm sort of jumping the gun here, what they do here now is they don't do the God thing with you. Don't worry about the God thing. Don't worry about the God thing. And they let you flounder around and drink or drug or fail or die. And, you know, and then after 20 years, whoever's left over, you know, that they're talking about God. I mean, they basically let you on your own figure out the God thing, and you don't figure it out, you die. Or you're unhappy, or you commit suicide, or you kill yourself, or you drink yourself to death, or you never get it. You know, they don't really, they would rather you die or drink, you understand what I'm saying, than risk your displeasure and get mad at us because we talk about God. So it's a whole different sort of thing. They don't talk about what you're really supposed to talk about. Well, they don't, I do. But they don't talk about what you're really supposed to talk about. So it's sort of like a watered down, sort of diluted AA. You know, it looks like A, but without power. You know, the power is sort of taken out of it, you know. And so we go in here. It's like being in a bar. All our friends are here. We are happy. We're gay. We have a good time. It's like entertainment. Every once in a while, we hit on some stuff that really is helpful. I'm not saying it's not helpful. But there's nothing that's really seriously forces you to think and confronts you in here. I mean, that's what your sponsor is supposed to do, and hopefully you get a sponsor that'll do that for you. I had sponsors that did that for me. It says in the big book, it says, but we will not know you. How are we going to, he says, God will, there it goes again, God will determine that. So your real reliance has to be on him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Because we crave fellowship. You're either going to fellowship with the bullshit artists, the ones that don't want to do, or you're going to fellowship, or you're going to, it's just like they said, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. The people that had, forget about the God thing, the people that had what I wanted, the people that I admired and had what I wanted, they were like totally focused on God. They were God-oriented, and that's the deal. And so I guess I sort of backed into God. It wasn't so much I wanted the God thing, because I was a lounge lizard. You know, I wanted the woman, I wanted the car, I wanted the money, but I wanted what Al Kennedy had, I wanted what Joan Snyder had. And so if you wanted what they had, you had to hang out with them. And as a true alcoholic, I end up taking on the coloration of the people I hang out with. So that's the deal. It's as simple as that. And that's my situation. So, you know, in the Bible, there's a great, you guys heard of the Ten Commandments. Remember that? So let me just draw you a little bit about it. Let me draw a little picture here on this thing. Because that's what, one of the Ten Commandments, maybe the first one, I don't have them in front of me right now, it says, I am the Lord your God. You will worship no other gods except for me. The big book says this. It says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. If you want to be rocked to the fourth dimension of existence, you got to make God the central factor of your life. That's what the big book says. Okay? And there's a great... line and you can draw correlations between things in the Bible about God and things in the big book about God and, you know, stuff they say. And there's a great line, and they have a line in the book of Genesis, one of the great lines, and it's so true. You guys remember a guy named Joseph? Everybody knows about Joseph with the coat of many colors. His brothers sold him in slavery, and then he was confronted with his brothers who were scared he was going to kill him. And I'm cutting through this real fast. And he says this one line, which is one of the major lines of Genesis. He says, you meant it for evil, but the Lord used it for good. He said, you meant something evil to happen, but God can turn things that seem horrible into the best thing that ever happened to you. The worst thing that ever happened to you, guys, here, was alcohol. The worst thing that ever happened to you. But it's the greatest thing that ever happened to you. Because of alcohol, you're here. And you have an incredible life that's going to open up for you instead of being out on the street living a life of quiet desperation. The world is your oyster. Who knows where you're going to go from here? It's going to be and it's because of something that is pernicious and sort of evil, you know? God has a funny way. It's like in the book of Jonah. Great book in Jonah. Jonah's the guy who was swallowed by the whale. Remember that? Well, the backstory on that is he was a priest, a high priest of the high God. God told him, go to Nineveh, go to this town, go to Miami, and tell those people about God. And he said, I ain't going to that flipping place. You know that, but I ain't going to Miami. Forget it. Those people are going to laugh at me. I'm going to the Crystal Cathedral. And, you know, what happened was God caused a great storm to happen, and the fish came up and ate Jonah. And Jonah's in the belly of the fish for 3 days, and he's begging God, please, I'll go to Miami. I'll do anything. So the fish spits him out. He goes to Miami, and everybody starts converting and everything like that. And, you know, and the bottom line is, so he suffers, and then he changes. He suffers, and he changes. And the book says, the way we get a new perspective on things is by repeated humiliation, the crushing of our self-sufficiency. We get slammed, we suffer and everything, we change, we suffer and we change, we suffer and we change. We lose the job and we change in a different direction. You know, we lose things and we change, the money's taken away and we change. We don't change voluntarily, we change with a gun to our head, at least for the first 10 or 15 years. Because our basic deal, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic, is if you, as soon as you feel okay, you're already resting on your laurels. And relying on the job and the woman and the car. And AA is sort of like a second thought. Because that's our nature. As long as we're feeling good and everything's okay. The interesting thing about alcoholics is we are sensitive. You know, it says, you know, my sponsor, you're not sensitive, you're touchy. We are touchy and sensitive. But it is kind of amazing, as touchy and sensitive as we are, how we can live such a bullshit, pathetic, crappy, miserable life and hang on to it without changing. I mean, think about it. No person in their right mind towards the end, the stuff, how I was living, how I was drinking, what was going on with me in my mind, the fact that I was able to put up with that shit for years, you know what I mean? And not even real, I can get used to feeling miserable. I can get used to having a horrible freaking life and not even know I'm having a horrible freaking life. It's amazing how we can get used to being horrible and miserable and pathetic. And God is like sort of, you know, it says we learn the value of suffering. The book of James, which was one of the main books they used. It says, this is the line it says in the book of James. You see, you got to connect these dots. This is what they were studying. It says, rejoice when you have problems and bullshit of every type, because if you persevere by looking at God through this bullshit, you are going to change and you're going to have a stronger faith. That's what the 11th step is all about, having a strong, how do we have a strong, we don't, you know, and so we hit bottom. And so God is like a diamond cutter. He's like a spiritual surgeon. And so he uses alcohol. He has a very interesting and sometimes not so pleasant, he works in strange ways, his miracles to perform, you know, and he works in some mischievous ways, his miracles to perform. He has a strange way of sending that fit. He's like doing spiritual surgery, and he uses whatever he uses. And for everybody in here, he decided one day he was going to use alcohol to get your attention. So that you would somehow, and you know what the sixth step says? It says, once you become entirely ready to get close to him, it says, the way you tell the difference between the men and the boys is the men who are entirely ready are repeatedly for a lifetime trying to grow in the image and likeness of God. Whatever that is, that's a whole other story, the image and likeness of God. And God has an interesting way of hurting alcoholics, bringing alcoholics along. And it's not necessarily always a pleasant way. And so he can take alcohol and fill this room. He can take everything from you. He can take your soul, he can take your self-worth from you. He can put you in the worst situation, the most horrible situation, just to get you to all of a sudden pay attention, which is what he did to me. I had all sorts of, on the outside I was successful, a lawyer, all sorts of degrees, married, women, cars, whatever the heck it was on the outside, and I was pathetic. I was evil, pathetic, and selfish, and a total piece of crap, a piece of dung on the world, not helping anybody, not giving a shit about anybody except myself, and I did not see that. And he used alcohol, so on December 25th, 1981, a kid whose whole life was about women and cars and Playboy Club and American Express. He used me at December 25th, Christmas morning, at 2 o'clock in the morning, where I was 31 years old and I thought my life was over. And some guy came on TV and I wanted to die. And he said, you turn your life over to Christ and you'll change. You'll be reborn. And I got down on my knees and I said this, what they call the sinner's prayer, you know, which is like the third step prayer. I said, Lord God, I renounce him, blah, you know, whatever the heck I said, you know, and I said, please come into my life as my Lord and Savior, which is not a big deal, but for a Jewish kid from New York, Great Neck, New York, believe me, it was a big deal. Now, put it this way, I don't know how many Jews we have in here, but if you're a Jewish kid, okay, and you're down on your knees asking Christ to come into your life, let me tell you something, that's an indication of a major change. You got to be real desperate, you know what I mean? So that's pretty much an indication. That's some evidence that you've actually hit bottom. You're not doing this shit like, I don't know about the God thing, you know. You're not doing this thing like, I don't know whether I want to go to Bible study. You know, you're like down. I was like down on my knees in a nanosecond without a question. And why? Because I thought my life was over. I thought it was never going to be better again. Now, I'd like to be able to say it was rocky, but God caused that to happen. By removing everything in my life that was important, including my self-esteem. You know? And I don't know whether anything, it's not like you have a blind, there was no blinding light or anything, I just went to sleep. I continued to drink for 30 days, and 30 days later I had my last drink. I walked in a room at Alcoholics Anonymous, I picked up a white chip. I'm a white chip wonder, which means I didn't drink after that. I mean, I was still crazy, but I picked up a white chip and I got a white, that's the deal. And I come in here and I was ready. I wanted what you had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. I didn't know what you had, but I know I wanted it. I didn't want what I had. And so I ultimately get a sponsor, and I'm skipping over a lot of stuff. I get a sponsor named Bob Sullivan. You know, and he handed me a 24-hour book. I said, "Will you be my sponsor?" He said, "Yes." I mean, there's stories behind all this. I could spend an hour telling the story how I ultimately asked Bob to be my sponsor, because you know that doesn't happen right away. You know, there's also, but I asked him to be my sponsor. He handed me a 24-hour book, and he said three things. He says, number one, he said, "If you ever want to drink, call me first. Don't call me after you drink. I'm not interested." You know what I mean? He says, "That's number one. Call me first." Number two, here's a 24-hour book. He says, "I want you to get down on your knees every morning. I want you to read the." Let's get this. Now I'm just sober in Alcoholics Anonymous like a week. I'm a lounge lizard. All I'm interested in is pussy and money and cars and all that sort of stuff. My whole life is that. My alcoholic life seems the only normal life. I meet this guy. He hands me this book. Listen, I know that apparently there's a guy somewhere on the planet. There may be more than one, that if you mention God in a room, they're running out the door. I was not one of those guys. I'm just telling you. But I have a feeling that the guys that are ready to bolt out the frickin' door when you mention God, they're probably leaving anyway. Don't you think? I mean, there's enough bullshit you tell people in here to do and not do. Don't go out with that girl. Don't go through slippery places where if the God thing's going to send them out the door, you know, they'll hear something in AA and they'll be out the door. They just don't want to stop drinking. You know, it's not the God thing. They just don't want to stop drinking. Because if you want to stop drinking, you ain't going out any doors. Because where are they going to? The booze is out there. It's not in here. And so all I know is he handed me that 24-hour book, which is actually a compilation of the big book and the Holy Bible. Sort of mixed up. One of the greatest books. I mean, it's still my favorite deal. He handed me that. And he said, "I want you to get down on your knees, and I want you to read this every day, before, right when you wake up, and I want you to ask God's help to stay sober." And I got to be honest with you. I don't remember him asking me whether I believed in God. And I don't even remember me saying, "Well, I don't believe in God." You know what I mean? Because by then I had already forgotten about what I said, you know, 30 days before. And all I know is every day in the morning I get down and I read the 24-hour book and I say, "God help me to stay sober just for today." And then the third thing was join a home group. And there's a whole story about joining a home group and that kind of stuff. So that's how I started out in here. And back then, 40 years ago, I'm not saying it was so much different, but it really was different. I mean, there was no question about you. At the end you said the Lord's Prayer. At the beginning you said the Serenity Prayer. They were reading the Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. You know, they were not scared of the God thing, and people would talk about God. And I'm not saying it was like 1935, but it wasn't so much watered down as it is today. You know, one of the blessings is we have treatment centers. One of the curses is we have treatment centers, you know. By the time you go through the treatment center deal, you know, the God's been pretty much washed out. You know, and you just have a psychological program where we don't talk about God. And so you read that book, and you're a newcomer, and you read that book, and you remember you're filtering it through your mind. And you see things like, you see this thing in the book, it says this, that you've got to utterly abandon yourself to God. And you skip through, I mean, you don't see that. I mean, I'm not saying you're stupid, and I'm not saying you're mean-spirited. I'm not even saying you're not willing. I'm just saying, you read this book, and there's lots of things. Yeah, the jaywalker, yeah, man, that's me. And somewhere in that book you read, utterly abandon your life to God, and you read it, but you skip over it, because you know that doesn't really apply to you. because they have a lot of crazy shit in there. There is one who has all power, that man is God, may you find him now. Half measures of value, you know, you read it, but you sort of like skip over it, you know, or maybe it's not so much you skip over it, you don't really understand what it means anyway, you know what I mean? But you still read the 24, so, and you read things in the big book, you read this stuff, God makes that possible, you're on a new basis, the basis of trust and relying upon God, all men of faith have courage, they trust their God, you know, they trust their God, they let him demonstrate in his life what he could do to them, and blah, and once we get rid of fear. You know, you read all that stuff. You read the stuff where it says we encourage church membership. Most of us belong to society. You read that, but you don't read it. You stick with the drinking stuff. I mean, you're brand new. You got a month, 2 months, 5 months, 7 months. You stick with the stuff about the drinking and the insanity, because that's what you understand. You understand the drinking and the insanity, the drinking and the insanity. Everything that's insane that talks about how insane we are, you get that. Everything about the drinking, you get that. The God stuff, you're light on that, and after all, they're light on that in the rooms anyway. Everybody tells you in the rooms, don't worry about the God thing. And you're sober, you're not drinking, you got a year. You're pretty much, they're giving you fucking birthday parties, you know what I mean? You're picking up chips, people are applauding for you. They're not saying you got to get down. Nobody's saying get down on your knees. Nobody's shoving God down your throat. As a matter of fact, people are saying, I'm glad people didn't shove God down my throat when I came. I would have been out of here. And you're saying, you pretty much for the first 2, 3, 4 years figure, like most people figure, like that great essay, they wrote an essay in the 1950s called The Strong Cup of Tea, that if you stay sober and if you go to meetings and you don't drink and go to meetings, don't drink and go to meetings, don't drink even if your ass falls off and go to meetings, it does say Alcoholics Anonymous, you pretty much have figured this thing is about not drinking. You've joined the not drinking club. You're not drinking. It's working for you. You understand what I'm saying? Go to meetings. They're not heavy on the God thing. As a matter of fact, they're heavy on making sure you don't talk about the God thing. You know what I mean? And they get mad at you if you talk about the God thing. You can say, if you're going to talk about God, do it like shorthand. Say HP or something like that. But don't quote shit like, the Lord has been so grateful to me or any of that stuff. You know, just cool it on the God thing. So you're pretty much sure. In the 1950s, in the 60s, it became pretty much apparent that people realized that you could actually do this thing without abandoning yourself to God, without making God a big deal. You understand what I'm saying? By just hanging around the rooms, because you do, like an alcohol, true alcoholic, you become what the person you'll be will depend upon the people you hang out with. So just by hanging out with your sponsor, hanging out in the rooms, going to the A toga parties, you used to have toga parties here, you know, going to the birthday parties, having your friends here, you know, and every once in a while going to meetings and talk about the problem and the solution, mostly the problem and everything like that, and being light on the God thing, give it one light over, you know, God's in the, we mention him every once in a while, but, you know, we don't want to say really the Lord's Prayer will do that. And so, people realize, and most people are coming here, they weren't low bottoms. They were middle bottoms or high bottoms. Nobody was being offended. And so what happens is you sort of realize that you can do this AA thing and not drink, go to meetings, which is all you really need for this thing. And you don't have to do the God thing. You know, all that other stuff they have in there about abandoning yourself to God and utterly abandoning yourself to God and see what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. All that stuff in there, it says sincerely make a decision to trust God. All sorts of remarkable things happen if you stay close to him, performers work well. You know, walking through the archway of freedom, you know, and, you know, he's the new employer. You don't really have to worry about that stuff because it's not stressed in AA meetings. It's not stressed in the fellowship. It's not stressed with your sponsor. As a matter of fact, this one guy said to me, I heard you're a good speaker. You're Russell, right? He says, I heard you're a good speaker, but you talk too much about God. As a matter of fact, people talk, put you down. They use it as criticism. He talks too much about God. And so what happens is you find yourself, you're 5 years sober, you're 7 years sober, you're 10 years sober, you're 15 years sober, and you're pretty much doing it. You're doing AA. You're good AA. You're not drinking. You're even helping people. You're doing some stuff and everything like that, and you're not drinking, so you figure that AA, you don't really have to do the God thing. God isn't important. But every once in a while, you notice that people start drinking again. Every once in a while, you notice that a guy with 5 years starts drinking, and there's another guy who can't make it, or nobody, you know, somehow they're on the 50th 90-day thing, and you notice that there are some people in here that are not drinking for 10 years, but, you know, really they're not happy with their sobriety. They're not always smiling, they're not enthusiastic and everything like that. But you notice if you're hanging around here, you'll notice that there are some people who are just, you know, it's like I play golf and Tiger Woods plays golf, but we must be playing a different game. And you look around, you realize that there are people in here playing a different game. And also what happens is you get to a point in AA where you seem to be okay, and you're not drinking, and you're going to meetings here and there. Maybe you stop going to meetings, maybe you don't go to that many, and the meetings become sort of boring. You know, you're hearing the same old stuff, don't drink, go to meetings, don't drink, go to meetings, same old stuff. You're not drinking, and you're doing what we naturally do, and that is rest on your laurels. You're resting on your laurels, which basically says, you're basically marking time. You're treading water. like if you were to go to prison, I'm a criminal attorney, you go to prison. There are guys that go to prison for 10 years and they're doing hard time. You know, they're just one more day, one more meeting, one more meeting, one more meeting. You know, and it's like, it's you're not drinking, so you're a member of AA and nobody can tell you shit because you can say, get off my back, I'm not drinking. But you're pissed. You're pissed at life. You're pissed at your life. You find yourself, you're worrying a lot. You know, the big book's saying we lose fear of people. You're scared of people in their judgment. Big book says you lose fear of economic insecurity. You're scared shitless every time you're looking at your bank account. You're not getting the promises. You're not being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. But you're sober. You're physically sober. And that's what AA is all about, right? But every once in a while you run into somebody, you know, maybe one in a thousand, that seems to be, you know, I don't know, he's eating some sort of different food, chewing on a different deal. You reach sort of like a level. You reach a level where you're stuck and you can't go any further. And then God sends the fish. He does his surgery. And you find out, just like it says in the big book, it says the way we get a new perspective is by repeated humiliations, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. You find out that when you got crushed to come in here with a gun to your head because you didn't want to drink anymore, that that was not the only hitting bottom. And you start hitting bottom over porn. You start hitting bottom over women and romance, or men and romance. You start hitting bottom over money. You start hitting bottom over you name it. Everything in this world, because you realize that you're not addicted to the alcohol anymore, but man, you are addicted to the women and the sex and the romance and the men and the romance and the cars and the houses and everything in the world is like conspiring to show you how fucking pathetic you are. And you don't even know how to explain it. But all you know is every time you go to a meeting that you're in a problem, even if you have the guts to explain it to your sponsor, it's all about him or her or them or what happened or it or the car or the money. It's like a life of horrible problems, and you're living a life of quiet desperation. But let me tell you something, you're not drinking. So they'll give you a medallion, and you think, is that all there is? And some people, if they're lucky, get pressed so hard, you know, that they move to, all of a sudden they change. They sort of like, maybe they see somebody at a meeting and they say, will you be my sponsor? And all of a sudden that guy says, well, why don't you read this out of the big book? And all of a sudden they see this line that says, utterly abandon yourself to God. And all of a sudden they see something. They see something that's been there all along, but they're not doing it. They didn't even know they had to do it. They thought that, well, that's for, you know, these holy, you know. They see this line says, it says, we lose prejudice even against organized religion. And they've been walking around these meetings saying, I'm spiritual, not religious. I'm spiritual, not religious, because we're better than religious people. Religious people are goody-two-shoes. They think they're better than anybody else, and they go to church, and they tithe, and they give money to people, and they bring their families there and everything. But we are different. We are spiritual. We are like giants, spiritual giants. We have been cured. We are spiritual fucking giants. We really are. We are one. So we say I'm spiritual, not religious. To sort of, it sort of makes it sound like we're special. That we don't need to go to church. We don't need to congregate with people that are always singing hymns and talking about God and trying to work the Ten Commandments, whatever they're doing. We don't have to do that because we're spiritual. You know? We have a total misunderstanding about how pathetic we are. Total mis. You know, we hate religious people because we think they're self-righteous. They're self-righteous. And we turn into the most self-righteous idiots you can possibly imagine. Thinking like our shit don't stink. Like we're special. Not understanding that we're hanging by a thread. That if we just venture out, that we stop going to meetings, we stop doing the stuff we're doing, anything like that, which is basically allowing us to sort of be on life support, that we're going to start, we're dry as twigs because we have no connection with God. And we read this thing in the 12 and 12. And what does it say in the 12 and 12? You can even have an avid belief in God. You can believe in God, you know, but you don't make him the centerpiece of your life. Your belief remains barren. And you're going to have people that every once in a while they take them out of the trunk and they say the Lord's Prayer and they hold hands and everything and they go out there chasing money property, prestige, romance. That's what the sixth step says. We don't want to deprecate money, property, but disease, but nobody's made it worth the idea of chasing after these things than us. And we start learning that what we're really addicted to is the things and the think about things and comparing our insides with other people's outsides and comparing ourselves and thinking about how we're doing monetarily and vanity stuff and everything like that, and that's the deal we're doing. God has an interesting way of sending, of using, he can use alcohol, he can use bankruptcy, he can use love affairs, he can use so much bad shit at you to get you to the point where you're just dying. 10 years sober. I did everything, I sponsored everything that moved. You know, I was Mr. AA. I was doing these meetings all over town. You understand what I'm saying? I was in the group banquet chairman for 2 years on the road. Brought down Clancy and Johnny Harris here to speak. I was 8 years on relay. You know, you called up AA, you got me. You know, I'm going to like three meetings a day. I'm going nuts on the meetings. Bill Wilson did the same thing. 23 years sober, he wrote an essay on emotional sobriety. And realized he even had gotten to a point where he was resting on his laurels. What was his laurels? What was he done? We realized that we get to the point when you start resting on your laurels. You know, he says, I am the Lord your God. Put no other things before me. And what Bill Wilson realized, if you read that thing, is that he was resting on his laurels and he was about to go into a depression again because his dependency was a dependency upon AA. Are you ready for that? How's that for a crazy thing, you know? Now, there's nothing wrong with depending upon AA or depending upon your sponsor, depending upon your people. But what happens is when your sobriety depends on AA. And I mean, that's good. That'll get you there for 3 or 4 months or 3 or 4 years or 10 years. But when your whole life is dependent upon you're sober and you're doing okay because you're going to AA meetings or you depend upon AA or you depend upon your sponsor, you know what I mean? So you don't have to be dependent upon God. You don't have to give God the glory. You're missing what AA is all about. You're missing what the steps are all about. What they're designed to do, to give you a connection with God. You're missing what the 11th step is all about. You're missing about what the real power is. The power is in AA behind the group, behind the people, behind the sponsor. The thing that makes things work, the thing that actually changes, gives you the psychic changes. You know, what did Dr. Young say to Roland Hazard? He said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never been successful. Is there no hope? Yeah, here and there, once in a while, in ancient times. You know, people, he says, they are reborn. It's a God thing. It's not an AA group thing. You know, it's not a step thing. It's a God thing. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the ideas, emotions, attitudes, which are the focal point of these people's lives, are pressed to one side. They become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes, and it's all about the God thing. That's why they wrote Chapter of the Agnostics. And it said in the chapter, he says, we know that's going to piss you off. We wrote a book about God, it's going to piss you off. However, this sort of thing has to be abandoned. God either is or he isn't. What's your decision going to be? There is no middle-of-the-road solution, which basically means there is no middle-of-the-road solutions. Half measures avail you nothing. So what does it matter? So you stay sober for 10 years and you're angry, or you're pissed off, or you drink after 10 years. Because you've never really hooked into what they were trying to send you to. So at 10 years sober, I'm doing everything and I'm not happy with my sobriety. Here and there, once in a while, an alcoholic, dry for the moment, says, feel better, look better, have a better time. We feel sorry for, we laugh at such style. We know we'll try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll know loneliness as few do. And all of a sudden, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're lonely. All of a sudden, you're lonely. You're 40 years old. You're 50 years old. You're 70 years old, and you're lonely. And you go to AA meetings, and you're somehow hanging together, and you're not drinking, but you're not happy. And you don't understand what the problem is, because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, but you're like treading water, and you're checking off time. And you don't know, and you don't know where to go, because you think you're doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're not, because you missed the whole thing. You know, basically, you're just doing half measures. You know, and you don't even understand what the half measures are, because when you go to AA meetings, they don't talk about any of this stuff. They really don't. They don't talk about any of this. I know they don't, because people after meetings, when I talk, they say, man, I've never heard shit like that. He says, they never talk about that stuff in my meetings. I say, I'll tell you what, they talk about it every meeting I go to. Because I talk about it, you know, and that's it. I'm willing to talk because that's what the deal is. And so 10 years sober, I go up, somebody taps me on the shoulder and says to me, he says, you ever think of going to a Bible study? I immediately say, no. I say, no, I'm Jewish. I don't even know what the fuck that means because... Apparently Jewish people don't read the Bible. I don't know what that's all about because the way I read it, I have a Bible and it has an Old Testament. And as a matter of fact, my understanding of the Jews is for 40 years they carried around an ark in the desert, which had the first five books of Moses in it. I don't know the deal. I mean, they're like, they were people of the book. You know, I have some guy who says, I'm Jewish. I said, let me explain. You just think you're Jewish. He said, well, you read the Bible? No. You believe in anything in the Bible? No. I said, listen, if I took you back 8,000 years ago, plunked you in the middle of a bunch of Jews, they'd be stoning your fucking ass. You keep on telling them you're Jewish. What you're telling me is you're culturally Jewish. You like bagels. You like cream cheese. You eat lox. You like Jewish humor. I get that. I'm Jewish myself. But you don't believe any of that shit. You don't believe any of that God shit. You don't believe Moses heard God out of a burning bush that he appeared to him that did not consume it. You don't believe that stuff. Well, no. Well, not really. So you don't believe that the Red Sea parted? No, I don't believe. You don't believe any of the miracles, right? So you're Jewish, but you don't believe anything that Jews believe. But you like bagels. And I'm not putting down Jewish people. I'm just talking about, because Christians like, there are people who are culturally Christian. They'll say, what are you? He says, I'm a Christian. I'm a Catholic. But they don't read the Bible. They don't. He's not the central fact of their lives. I mean, there's a lot of other things. Because the truth is, money is the central part of your life. Vanity is the central part of it. Getting laid is the central part of your life. Everything in this world is the lusting after the things of this world is the central part of your life. And everything in the sixth step that they talk about, don't make that stuff the central part of your life. You know, that's where they talk about that stuff. To get it removed. Remove the real addiction to the things and the stuff so you don't go crazy. And the bottom line is so then, so he said, why don't you go to try? So I said, I'm Jewish. I don't know what that means. That means like, what do people think? What do people say? Because when you're 10 years sober and you're still worried about what people think about you, and you haven't really read the big book because you haven't seen the parts where they say we encourage church membership, you haven't really seen the part where it says you utterly abandon yourself to God, you haven't seen the part where they talk about the Good Samaritan, which is out of the book of Luke, you haven't seen the part where they say the books we found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, so absolutely essential, somewhere on that. You haven't read that stuff because you glossed over that stuff because you were concentrating on the jaywalker, you know? Because you're concentrating on the jaywalker and all the other stuff. You missed, you know, the stuff that said job or no job, wife or no wife. That's bullshit. If they say they cry out for money, they can do everything as long as they trust God and clean house. You just sort of forgot the trust God thing. You know what I mean? You know that God's there, but you also know that it's not that important. And you also know you've been told in groups that if you talk about it, you're killing newcomers. You are personally responsible for killing newcomers because you mentioned God. And so you let them sort of flounder around and discover for themselves a drink or something like that because you're not going to really stress anything that's in the big book. And so I started going to Bible study and there were a bunch of guys that were 60, 70, 80 years old, 20 or 30 years older than me. There was a guy sitting there, he was a Baptist preacher, he was a missionary, he had 60 years sobriety, you know, and they're studying the source material that the founders were studying when they went to the Oxford group, that the AA big book came from, and they're talking about the same stuff we talk about in here. They're talking about the same exact stuff we're talking about. They're talking about sin. They're talking about moving from perfection. They're talking about pride. They're talking about anger. They're talking about gluttony. They're talking about greed. They're talking about lust. And you read this Bible, and it's all about crazy people. It's all about crazy people. I mean, David is screwing around with Bathsheba, you know, and trying to get her husband killed. And there's not a well one in the whole group except for like one guy. You know what I mean? And they're all crazy and how they get well and how they get better. And it all talks about the same exact principles as a matter of fact. And then you read the big book and you say, shit, that's right out of China. That's right out of this. Good. And then you read the Good Samaritan. And you say, this is like the Bible for dumb. And you realize that the Bible stole everything from the big book. And you start to say, this is what they're reading. And the only difference is In Bible study, now listen, this is the only difference. You're going to like this. This is weird. The only difference is in Bible study, you're hanging around with guys that have been studying this for 30, 40 years, and they're original, and they're spiritual and religious. Different kind of thing. And guess what? And you want to know something? Even though they're studying the Bible, and it's just like the big book, with all the faults and the sins and everything, they call them sins instead of defects of character. As a matter of fact, if you read the 12 and 12, they call it, thus is our defects of character or sins. They call a spade what it is. And what happens is the only difference in Bible study is they read all this stuff that we're reading here. They talk about the old stuff. But you want to know something? The only thing they talk about, the main thing they talk about is God. God's power, God. They're like, they don't say things like, don't talk about God, it'll scare away the newcomers. Don't say, don't mention God, it'll scare away. As a matter of fact, it's kind of pathetic. It's all about Jesus with these guys. I want to tell you something. You hold up a picture of a squirrel. You say, what is this picture? Now, to me, it looks like a squirrel. But you know the answer is Jesus. You know that's the answer. They're like God over that. So all of a sudden, you're in a group of people, and all they're doing is praying about God, praying to the Lord, singing about the Lord, and everything like that. You know what happens to an alcoholic? You know it says you will. What does it say? God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You know what happens when you go into AA meetings and you're reading the big book and you're doing everything in AA and you're also hanging around with people, like they say in the book, we encourage church membership, and all they're doing is talking about God, 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 God. And these are people that, you know what happens? You start changing. And you want what they have, you start changing. And they're not nervous, and they're not worried, and they're not scared. You start changing. And you start getting getting focused. God becomes less of a fluffy sort of thing that's out there and invisible. See, God is invisible to you, but the IRS isn't invisible. God is invisible to you, but the blonde is not invisible. God is invisible to you, but the house and the car and the money is not invisible to you. If you're an alcoholic and you're a material man, and all alcoholics are material, and you have these other higher powers in your life, higher, lower powers. I'm talking about the lower powers that are higher, the powers like the cars, the women, the money, and everything like that, that'll get you to do all sorts of stupid, goofy things like spending money you don't have, to buy shit you don't need, to impress people you don't like, to make yourself feel better. When you're dealing with all the other higher powers that'll lead you astray, you understand, unless you find the higher power that is above all those powers, the other powers will take you away even as you're thinking you're okay because you're not drinking for 10 years. And so one thing that happens to you is you start because I need a power that I can believe on, that I know is there, and I hang around with believers. You hang around with believers who are not ashamed of talking about and never apologize for trusting in God, because all men of faith have courage. They trust their God. And then you can talk about him, and you don't worry about what people think about him, because you want to know something? You've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You've experienced much of heaven. And you want to know something? You tell your truth, because because your self-worth is not based upon whether some guy in an AA room who isn't even paying your Visa card is rolling his eyes. What a pathetic way to live your life, worrying about what AA people think about you, because you're talking about God. Pretty pathetic when you think about it, you know? And you got to understand, when you're worried in an AA room where the big book talks about God, when you're worried in an AA room when the big book talks all about God, about talking about God because you're worried about what people think about you when you walk out the door and talk about you, listen to me. Let me tell you something. You don't have a shot out there. If in an AA room where the whole book is about God, and the founder's book is about God, where God's all over the walls and the steps and everything, if you're scared to talk about God, you don't have a shot in hell out there in the real world. Okay, nobody's talking about him in there if you can't talk about him in here. And the only reason you can't talk about him is because you're corroded with fear. And you don't even see how pathetic you are. You don't even see how bad it is. Until all of a sudden things get so bad and you hit that second bottom or that third bottom or that 15th bottom. And some guy comes up to you and says, why don't you try Bible study? And something you would never do the first month or the first 5 years, all of a sudden you go to it, and all of a sudden you start enjoying it, and you start changing, and your things change. Then I joined the church. became a deacon in that church, started a ministry in that church. Now I go to AA, now I'm spiritual and religious. That's just my story, because what the big book says, it says, you know, that's what my story is, and constantly changing. And you know what? And when I start resting on my laurels, because you can rest on your laurels at 40 years. Believe me, you know, that fish is waiting for me. You know, but I'm going to tell you something. You know why you need to have a relationship with God, a strong relationship with God, a God you can believe in, a God you can picture, a God who's your friend who's sitting next to you, and you absolutely have an avenue. You know why? Because when the cancer comes, and it's coming for all of us, when the death comes in our families, when the real shit hits the fan, I'm not talking about the bullshit. You know, when the real shit hits your lives, you know, the heart disease, the people die and everything like that, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you know something? The West Dixie Club ain't going to be there with you. Your sponsor ain't going to be there with you. It's going to be you in a dark room all by yourself, you know, staring at the ceiling, trying to figure out what the hell's going to happen to you. And everybody in here has been there. There's not a person in here who hasn't been lying in bed, woken up by some sort of worry or some sort of something, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and they can't get back to sleep because their mind is going 1,000 miles per hour, and they can't find any peace because they have no God. Because it's just them alone in the world, they're orphans. That's the truth. That's alcoholism. You don't want to be stuck there. You know, you don't want to be stuck in that deal. That's the real deal. So I think I'm going to end on that note. So thank you very much.